missing one very important detail here.
The record. Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dennis.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way, including this Covetica Stout.
Yes, and what's left of this Mexican-made squirt soda. Covering bicycling, trains, transit, and simpler living, and adventures and life hacks. I just realized, like, I started going by memory.
We talk about all those things.
Yes. And today, getting fit.
Like dead. Richard Simmons?
Fitted. Fitted. Let's try that again. Getting fit.
Yes.
Dead. Fitted.
Oh, sorry, I stepped on you. We're going to talk to Stephanie Edmond in a little bit. She does a good business in making sure that people's bodies and bikes talk to each other well.
Yes.
And play nicely together. And it's surprising, I'm sure, how they don't.
It's surprising how many assumptions we take when we get on the bicycle.
Right. Like, this isn't going to make me feel bad. But sometimes it makes
you
feel
bad. Or when it does, it's the bicycle and not necessarily, like the fit of the bike or how I fit on the bike or how, you know, how we talk to each other, how the bicycle and myself and my body talk to each other.
Right.
But we'll get all of that in a little bit.
In just a little bit. So, hey, what'd you do this weekend?
Besides spending an entire day in this very seat.
Yeah, we were here on Saturday for the open house. It was a good time.
It was all right. Yeah, it was fun. I'm glad you came to sort of relieve me of duty that, honestly, like, I guess no one really asked about or asked for.
You mean, like, board but, op? You were helping record people's voices.
Yeah, engineering this, the whole thing that I don't know what we're going to do with yet.
Yes, we've captured people's voices. That's the important part, yeah. So if anybody doesn't know, our studio is
our
housed
studio lives
inside of a 1967 Airstream trailer. We're a part of Stream PDX, which is, if you go to streampdx.com, you can see what we are doing to try and engage the voices of the community around us. So that's something we do. But we have been working on this project for a little while, trying to kind of get it off the ground. And last night, it felt like it was off. Well, no, 2 nights ago. It felt like it was
it
off
felt
the
like
ground.
Last night, maybe. Sunday was a wash.
Yes. No, it was Sunday was a wash, and I'll tell you about that in a minute.
Okay.
But no, we just had so many people coming and going. The door to this place was open all night. But we had like four different voices asking questions, and you were operating the board for like, what, all three?
Yeah. Three of the four, I suppose.
Yeah. Good job. Thank you.
Not too bad.
Yeah. Well, and I would imagine you were probably happier doing that and having a job than you would have been just kind of standing around.
Just wandering around. Yeah,
right.
Most definitely.
Right. I spent a lot more time kind of BSing in front of the trailer about what we do. Not BSing, I guess. Like, everything I said was true. But
you were doing the PR stuff.
Chewing the fat, with people who might be interested.
See, and that's a job that I can't do very well.
Oh, I don't know.
At one point, someone was asking me, so, like, what is this trailer all about? And because I had the button on me that said, like, I recorded at, and it's got the Stream PDX logo, but it actually says XOXO underneath
it. Right, because we were kind of housed by the XOXO organization first.
Right, well, there was a couple of times just because I was so, I don't know, cross-brained or whatever, that I kept going like, yeah, we're XOXO and we're a nonprofit that is recording.
At least you identified as
people, helping people with podcasts and but I would immediately direct them to the table where the handouts are because
there you go.
That's where the real information is.
Hard copies. Yeah.
Yes.
And it's good that you were identifying us as an organization that now is defunct. So I think that's
right.
I mean, XOXO is not, but at least the outpost is. So
right,
yeah,
right.
So they can't like Google it and find it somewhere else.
Oh, well, that's good.
I hope.
Yeah.
We'll find out.
This guy doesn't know what he's talking about.
Read the flyer. Read the flyer.
Hey, another thing I wanted to tell you about. So when you adjust your derailleur or any bolts on your bike.
Oh, yeah.
How much tension do you put on those bolts?
Just enough. The mama bear amount.
That is probably the right amount.
Were you the were you Goldilocks or were you the Papa Bear?
I think
one?
I might have been Papa Bear.
Okay. Too much?
Do not over-tension your bolts.
What happens?
Well, you break shit.
You were so disappointed.
Yes.
But you made it work.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's working. So long. Well, so, yeah, to let you know, I broke my front derailleur.
Okay.
The bolt that, you know, clamps down on the cable, you know, to keep it from moving.
Right.
Apparently over the years of changing cables and adjusting my cable tension and whatnot, it eventually broke.
True.
Like, not the bolt, but like the thing the bolt goes into.
Like the entire housing.
The hole.
Wow. The hole broke.
Yes.
I didn't know that was a thing. No, really, honestly, that happened to me on tour a couple of years ago where I over tightened my saddle collar.
And, oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
You know, threads gone. Yep. No more tension. Can't do it.
Yep.
So yeah, I know how it feels.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm basically running a run 1x9.
There we go.
At this point, yeah.
So are you using your center chain ring?
Correct.
Because you have three.
Yes.
Yeah.
I certainly wasn't going to use my outside
on your very fine disc trucker.
And the inside probably would have worked. I think it's like what 32 or something, which is I'm sure a very fine. Gearing. I don't know what the middle one is. It's in the 40s.
Okay. I'm glad you know the numbers at all. I have a big one, and then I have a small one, and there's like a medium-sized one in the middle.
So I was doing this at one point. Well, I do this all the time, actually. Constantly comparing my riding to your riding.
Oh, yeah?
And I found out that your big chainring on the outside is actually closer in tooth count to my middle chain ring.
Oh, really?
And I would see you biking on the outside chain ring and like just, you know, effortlessly going.
Interesting.
And I'm like, I better get on the outside chain ring. Just like grinding.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's intense. So, okay, so that would explain why it feels like it's so easy for me to like really crank.
Right. Yours is more mountain oriented.
Okay.
For climbing and whatnot, and mine's more road oriented.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know if anyone makes a road triple anymore.
Uh-huh. So you have vintage gear.
Yeah, I guess so. Until I over-tighten the bolts and break it.
What about, I mean, would you change that out at any point for a different...
I've been thinking about going to like a compact double.
Like before...
Just making a two-by.
Before Dayrond, where we climb all the hills this year?
Maybe after.
Okay. Hey, do we know when that is?
This year?
Do we know when it is?
April, I'm assuming.
Okay.
Right?
I forget if it's like the 4th April or, whatever.
They don't announce it until like it's almost on top of you, right?
Okay. So it's not going to be on our calendar for a little while.
Right.
But yeah. No, we should let people know when that happens. But I think I kind of want to go out solo this time.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think you wanted to last time, but then felt sorry for me.
Well, but that all happened before the ride.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just thinking this time I kind of want to see where I line up, you know, and kind of push myself a little bit.
Right on.
I mean, as though I wasn't pushing myself last year.
I want to spectate this year.
Really?
I don't know if I want to do it again.
Do you want to set up a tent and hand out beers?
Ooh, that would be fun.
Illegally?
Actually. I mean... Maybe someone who looks like me can do that.
It should be stated that, yeah, it is illegal.
Well, the ride itself, I mean, it's a legal ride in that, like...
Like you can be on the road on a bike.
Yeah, but it's not a sanctioned ride.
It's not organized.
Like, it's not organized by anybody.
Nobody's wearing a number. Ooh, we should wear numbers. I'll make up a number.
Yes.
Put one on my handlebar bag, put one on my back. Yeah. But, yeah, it should be pointed out that it is illegal to drink in public in Portland. It's not like that stops some people, but it is illegal.
Right.
So if someone wanted to do that, they would have to use discretion or be in a part of town where nobody cared.
Like,
I guess,
you know, right before the the turn up to Council Crest.
Like the course of Dayrond.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. There was that that group of people.
The Pixie Project.
That's right.
Yeah, they were just handing out whiskey. It's ridiculous. And we were already Team DFL.
They had all these beers. Yeah. And then, like, so we hung out there, and you guys, like, each had, like, three, I think.
Beers, because we thought that's all there was.
Right. And then they were like, well, we also got this whiskey hanging out here.
Like, we can't turn that down. It would be wrong to turn this down.
Well, you know, it would be inhospitable.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure. Yeah. So, I guess I don't mind people drinking outside. I think if one person drinks outside, everybody should be allowed to drink outside.
Yes.
Everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah. Without being hassled. So.
It is something that, like, I don't know if have we ever talked about that, about, like, the kind of the privilege that a lot of people on bikes have when it comes to drinking outside.
Well, it's, like, been mentioned before. I remember actually, Taz Lumen, she moved out of Portland partially because of not connecting. But, like, depending on which part of the bicycle scene you're involved in, if you get involved with a certain part of the scene, there's going to be a lot of open beers on the street.
Sure.
And so, again, I'm not opposed to that, except that it's illegal and other people who have open beers get hassled and or arrested or whatever.
Right.
And so I'd like to see it be a bit more equitable. I'd like to see it be like Germany, where it's considered to be food.
It's
and then you just go out and pop one open and drink
I'm
it.
I'm just
it's
having
okay.
a sandwich.
When I was in Munich, I bought so many beers to drink on the street just because I
just
could.
Just because you could, yes.
It's like no one cares. It was great. I don't want to get political, but that's how it should be. So, anyways.
Wow, that was so political.
I know, right?
Controversy.
This is divisive these days. We haven't talked a whole lot about those dynamics, but I think it is worth considering. One thing is if you're in a group, a privileged group that enjoys drinking in the street, invite some people who don't necessarily have that privilege. And help them drink in the street because that, you know,
well, this
some
this
people
could
need
be,
that.
This could be like a, you know, a larger blanket statement, like,
right?
If you enjoy the rights and privileges of a thing, maybe invite somebody who doesn't enjoy said rights and privileges to enjoy those privileges with you.
Absolutely. Again, we're not telling you to go out and drink in the street because that's against the law,
right,
at least where we live, and it's wrong. But, we're not telling you what to do.
I'm kind of reminded of the ending line, and I couldn't say it verbatim, but the end of Oregon History's Oswald West episode.
Oh, right.
Basically, like, here are all the things that he fought against. Here are all the things that we celebrate him for. Now, go enjoy all of the freedoms that you have now that he fought against that were, like, kind of a-hole-ish.
Right.
And enjoy the things that he did as well.
Right.
That we like.
Enjoy the good things and enjoy the bad things. Not bad things.
Enjoy the good things that he hated, maybe.
There you go. Yeah. You know who can't enjoy beer? A fugitive.
Oh, really?
You know who was a fugitive? D.B. Cooper.
Harrison Ford? Oh, right.
Also Harrison Ford. But no, D.B. Cooper, the guy who jumped out of a plane in, what, the 70s?
Yes.
72? 3? I forget now. Anyways.
Wait a minute.
D.B. Cooper jumps out of a plane.
D.B. Cooper jumps out of a plane around the time that Harrison Ford becomes a rising star and gets into planes.
I think we have a story here. So there's a brewery up in Vancouver just across the river from us in Washington State called Victor 23.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the route that D.B. Cooper was on when he hijacked the plane. And the one that he eventually jumped out of. So the entire brewery, D.B. Cooper themed. There's a large mural of an Orient Airlines plane on the wall.
And am I recalling correctly, you found a D.B. Cooper themed timber scarf?
Yes. Yeah, there was one with D.B. Cooper's picture on it. You know, the FBI sketch.
Awesome.
Yeah. Apparently not for sale. I wanted to pick it up for Doug from Kick-Ass Oregon History because he's a big D.B. Cooper fan.
I could see him enjoying that. Yeah.
Yep, it's not for sale. Damn shame, because it's right up next to all the sweatshirts and hats and everything that are for
sale.
So it goes. That just means that I'm going to have to steal it one night and then jump out of a plane.
There you go.
But Adele and I rode up there to sample the wares yesterday, and we got caught out in a rainstorm. It was a hell of a storm. It was all, there was hail and stuff. and it was like way wetter. It was one of those days where you leave on a bike ride and you think that it's going to be okay to be outside without your rain gear. And then we had to stop and put on our rain jackets halfway through.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was too late to put on the rain pants. Like, we could have done it, but it wouldn't have helped because we were already wet. And so it was an 8-mile ride from home from where we live, but it was it felt like a 20-mile ride because of the rain.
Yeah.
But
you
we did go to
like
Victor
slog
23.
It. Oh, right on.
Yeah. We got there. It was warm inside. We ordered some nachos. So that was fun. But, well, hey, we should break here and insert the interview that Stephanie is going to have with us in just a minute or two.
Yes.
Stephanie Edmond, good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
How are you tonight?
I'm very well, thanks.
Nice. Yeah. What are you coming here from?
From massage work.
Nice. How was that today?
Long day. My hands are tired. I usually do only 3 massages. Today was a 4, so I do a lot of 90 minutes. You know, it's hard on my own body to give that many amazing massages. I mean, I hope they're amazing.
I would imagine they are. So you do a lot of work with people's bodies, both restorative and proactive.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I actually first got into the bicycle world to go to school for massage.
Uh-huh.
And so I quit my day job that paid very well to work at a bike shop and go to massage school because they have flexible hours and so on.
Right.
And then I quickly got introduced to Bike Fit and decided, ooh, I can use all my anatomy and biomechanic knowledge right here.
All right.
I don't need to employ myself.
There you go.
So then
which is
I stayed
more difficult. Yeah.
So I stayed in the industry the next 15 years.
Right. There you go. How do people find you these days? What's your business called?
I work out of Gladys Bike Shop. So
there you go.
It's a wonderful little women specific shop. We have a saddle library. So for people, men and women alike, who need help finding the right seat, which is a primary reason for people to seek Bike Fit, they come and seek us at Gladys, where we have
we are big fans of Gladys Bikes and of Leah Benson.
Yeah, yes. Gladys is my favorite person.
You know she's going to slug you.
She's going to hit me next time she sees me. Yeah.
Well, I adore her as well, and I was introduced to her through Sweepy Bicycles.
Madeline.
Yes. So I worked for her in an independent Bike Fit studio after I worked for Bicycle Fitting Studios, which is one of the most famous in Portland, the baby of Michael Sylvester, who's one of the premier and leading bike fitters in the country, one of the first to develop a system that was based more on biomechanics than measure your body and put you in a box of what most people who are this length and this width.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about what bike fitting is and how that came about. So you say it's more than just measurements. It's more than just like, say, inseam and arm length.
Yeah, it's all of the above. I mean, it came about because people race bikes and people ride bikes and we have 2 arms and 2 legs and they have to be on 2 pedals and, you know, your handlebar. And it used to be in the Italian mystique of, well, the Italians and all these bike racers fit this, so we're going to crunch what their position is and put everybody in that position. Well, it turns out we're not all, you know, 20-something fit, flexible, strong bike racers. And
wait, are you, Aaron?
I'm definitely not 20-something.
Okay, I'm not either. Okay, yeah, just checking.
So I look at bike fit as a factor of 4 things. Your measurements, because that does matter. Your handlebar width should match ideally your shoulder width or be slightly wider. Your flexibility, that matters as well, depending on what you're doing. Your strength, and within that comes injuries, I would say, on the body side. And then what you're doing with the bike. Application is a huge piece of it. When somebody is racing a triathlon, it's very different than someone who's touring across the country. And the position for how long you're sustaining it really changes.
Makes sense.
So you just mentioned the 4. Say them again for us just so that people can dial into that.
Sure. Your physical measurements, your flexibility and strength, injury history, and application. I guess that's really 5 if you count injuries as separate from the body.
I suppose, yeah. I'm curious about the application point because I feel like that's not something that I think a whole lot about. It's also, I have one bike and I use it for everything. So I'm not a super versatile bike guy. You've got more bikes, Aaron, than I do.
Well,
slightly.
How many bikes do you have?
N plus one.
Yeah, plus one. Yeah. Three, I think.
Okay. I have two.
I've slimmed my fleet.
Tall. And so I'm always of the school of, like, you have one bike that does pretty much everything.
Uh-huh.
You know, so you don't have to be a versatile rider so long as your bike is versatile, which I guess makes you a versatile rider. But then there's, like, specific things. Like, I got out of Pugsley partially so I could have a project with my lady friend, but also so that, like, we have this bike that, you know, can do all this weird terrain that we also want to do. And, you know, I got this tiny little Georgina Terry just because I found a good Georgina Terry for real cheap.
It's cute.
And it had 24-inch wheels on it. So, yeah. So it just, you know, that was just like sort of a play bike.
Right.
But
I want to ask you, Stephanie, is there a difference in the way you would fit someone for a bike based on whether they were,
application.
Yeah, like how would you fit someone differently depending on the application?
Yes, what you two just spoke about is what I would call coming from the city perspective of one bike fits it all. And that's not really how all riders ride. Most people in the city...
They're doing it wrong. They're totally doing it wrong.
No, they're not doing it wrong. There's no wrong way to do it. I started with just one bike, and it was a mountain bike that I citified with slick tires. Mm-hmm. And, you know, back in the 90s when it was no suspension, and that was my commuter and could go off trail or whatever. But as I got into distance riding, I got introduced to road biking, and your road bike doesn't do everything. You can't just take your nice road bike to the bar and leave it while you go and hang out with your friends.
You can, but you don't get it back.
Right.
Exactly. So with road biking, the position is slightly different. It's more efficient than your hybridized X, Y, or Z bike that is fairly upright so you can see traffic and whatnot. So you're right that style of city bike is useful for almost everything, and you could tour on it as well. However, when you start getting into a type of bike function, for example, the road ride where I'm going to go and do, say, reach the beach, or I'm going to go and ride to Rocky Point and back, or Crown Point, excuse me, and that bike... On a road bike, that ride is so much more fun, and it's more efficient. Not only the gears and the skinny tires and the larger wheels, but the position itself puts you in a place where you can access more muscles. When you're slightly more forward, you get more power out of your glutes, what I like to call the power pack in the back.
So, I've always wanted one of those.
Oh, you have one. No, every time you go up a hill and you lean forward, your body is seeking that power. It's actually smarter than your bike. It says, oh, I need more power. I'm going to lean into it. And you kind of lean into your handlebars, and you're actually getting more power from your glutes.
Hmm.
And there's a sweet spot. So that's where like the science of bike fit comes in.
So I've often gotten like kind of weird looks from people as I get into the drops to go up hills. Like, I'll get into the drops out of the saddle.
Well, when you're out of the saddle, it's a little different, too. And I wouldn't necessarily recommend that unless you're experienced with how that changes the handling of it. But, your body is smart. It's wanting to get lower so you can access that glute. As you lean forward, there's about a 45-degree angle from, a horizon where you actually engage your glutes. And the deeper you are in that, the more power you get. To a certain point, once you get lower between 45 degrees and say 30 or maybe even a little lower, you get more and more and more power. And then all of a sudden you go beyond what your body can do, and then you start losing power. So there have been quite a few studies, although there's not a lot of money in studying bike fit and bike position. So most universities don't say, take our money and study this.
The application seems very specific to the racing style. Or it can be.
I would say I'm not a racer, but I ride a road bike, and so I like to make it easier on my body. And if you're too upright, then your body is looking for that position. And so you'll have problems because if you are riding distances and you're on a Dutch bike, you're going to seek that. And so what happens is if your handlebars are too upright, your hands get trapped there.
Uh-huh.
And you'll put too much pressure on your hand from being too upright.
Huh.
It's an oxymoron. You don't think about that. And often people come in saying, oh, my hands are going numb. And you're like, well, you're on a cruiser and you're commuting 10 miles a day. This
that
could be the problem.
Not designed for that. Yeah.
Exactly.
I remember riding, it was kind of a Dutch-styled bike in Boston. I was borrowing it from Josh Zissen when I was over there. And I remember realizing that I just couldn't stand up on that bike. Like, the way that bike was constructed, there was no way to stand up for more power.
To get more power.
Like, I couldn't, you know, the seat was set high enough. I couldn't get those glutes farther down. So, yeah.
Right.
I was wondering if you had a similar experience with your hands riding the Metro Feats. You know,
oh,
just because it's so
on
much
the Fresh
more
Hop
upright.
Century
yes.
When we rode that down to Salem and back. That's a good question. I feel like maybe I enjoyed it. I think I was having too much fun.
It's true.
And I'm not going to say I was drinking beer, but if I was, that would have contributed to not caring as much.
Right. Right.
So yeah, yeah. But no, I mean, definitely what you're describing, Stephanie, is the like you know. Some machines are built to do certain things, and if you try to make a machine do something it's not designed for, you can do it for a while, but it starts to hurt.
Right. Or if we take the third application, like something like mountain biking, if you're too deep in a position, then you're no longer as balanced between the wheels, perhaps, or you need to be able to maneuver back and forward to have your balance in a certain position to adapt to the changing terrain. So a road bike position, you might be able to do some dirt, but to do trail where you actually have to have that bike body separation and that ability to like maneuver over the top of the wheels so you can handle the changing terrain, it's not going to work so much. You're going to crash and it's going to hurt.
Yeah. And don't do that on a Dutch bike either.
Also difficult, hard on the quads.
Did you have any personal experiences that drove you towards caring about this? Like, did you get hurt by bike physics?
Well, I would say that I wasn't a road rider until I learned about bike fit. When I was working at the shop that introduced it to me, I mean, I was interested in the body. So I thought it was really cool that there was a system or a method to adapt a body better to a bike and make it more fun. But for myself, I have pretty small bone structure, and I just thought I wasn't a road biker. When somebody was like, Stephanie, you're commuting 100 miles a week. Why are you on that silly mountain bike? You should really be on a road bike. And I said, well, road biking's not for me. I don't find it comfortable. And she was like, no, you just never had a bike that fit, and you have tiny little shoulders. You need a bike fit. And so I got a secondhand road bike, and sure enough, it was actually about the same weight or even heavier than my mountain bike, but set up appropriately with a tiny little 36 centimeter handlebar, all of a sudden my shoulders didn't hurt.
Yeah, yeah.
So if I'm triangulated on a men's bike, or how most bikes come unisex with
uh-huh.
a 40 or 42 centimeter bar,
right.
I'm at this crazy triangulated position that puts a lot of stress on my shoulder joint.
And you wouldn't do push-ups that way.
No, you would not do push-ups that way. Or a plank.
Yeah.
Try to do a plank like
right.
that. I mean, not very comfortable. So yeah,
okay.
I would get this burning sensation. And when I finally got the right setup, I was like, wow, this is amazing. And then I decided I wanted to ride to San Francisco, and the rest is history.
Yes.
You did it?
I did.
Nice.
I did. About 2 years after I started road biking,
I
convinced my brother to get a bike instead of a car when he got out of the military. And I convinced him that he should ride down to San Francisco with me. It was a blast.
Very good. Very good. You took the traditional coastal route?
Oh, yes.
Nice.
Oh, yes.
So what were you riding on that trip?
I was riding a Le Monde, a steel road bike frame that was not a touring bike, but just had a rear rack and panniers. And
how did you survive?
It wasn't a touring bike.
With rain gear.
I was one of those.
Oh, okay. Yes. Oregon Spring.
Nice. How far back was that? How long ago?
Gosh, that was like 2003.
Okay, so a couple
yeah.
years now.
A few, yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Do you recommend, specifically for touring, do you recommend any particular fit adjustments?
Well, you want a bike that's comfortable and a seat that you know very well. Don't go on a tour with a seat that you haven't ridden on before.
Any more than you would go hiking with brand new hiking boots.
Right,
like
exactly.
Everyone suggests a leather saddle. I'm going to buy this the day before I embark on my cross-country
that's
trip.
That's right.
And a bike that can take either panniers, or if you're going to do a trailer, a bike that you've ridden with a trailer. I really am a fan of disc brakes, regardless of the style of bike, simply because with the extra weight, it really is amazing. You're not relying on the rim surface, so the chance of having spoke brake in the middle of nowhere or anything like that, it really reduces that likelihood. And in the rain, our climate is definitely, I love disc brakes for our climate.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're touring in the rain, or if it could rain while you're touring.
Well, I did a tour in Death Valley, and I'll tell you what, when you're going 10 miles downhill, disc brakes are also a huge benefit, even
sure.
if it's hot.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I love disc brakes. But you can tour on anything, you know, hybrid, road bike, as long as it can take a rack and bags, go for it.
Yeah. So what about, I mean, would you, obviously the shoulder thing you were describing earlier, mm-hmm. like if your arms are splayed way out, that's going to cause pain over time.
Yeah.
I would imagine bicycle touring is a place where you would see some of those inflammations and some of those problems come out. So
yeah, which is why you see most people touring on road style bikes, because you have multiple hand positions. So when you're in a single position, you fatigue more quickly. Whereas if you have multiple hand positions, you're using the same muscles but slightly differently. So you can move to the drops when you're in a long flat, or you can move out to the edge of the hoods and move up to the flat part and really rest those muscles and you know,
Move
your hands around.
So if someone's touring on a cargo bike, they should have aero bars as well. I have never seen that set up anywhere, but I'm sure it exists.
Oh, gosh, I hope not. You know, the narrower your hands are, the more twitchy the bike. So
right.
you see those messengers with those handlebars that are just barely bigger than their saddle?
Right.
Yeah, not very stable. You still have to get your shoulders between the car. I don't really understand that bike fit.
Yeah.
Change.
Well, what would you say to people? Because I don't know that we know a lot of messengers, but we've known a couple of folks who do messenger-style riding.
I can't say I've seen the bars so ridiculously narrow on someone I know anyways.
We have reasonable friends.
Yeah.
But that bike messengering is kind of it's almost a job that glories in kind of the abuse of the body in some ways. How do you see that?
I would agree. I would absolutely agree. And the bike messengers that I know are reasonable, and they usually have a road bike or a normal sized handlebar setup. But you know, it's cool to have it look good and match your wheels and be really narrow.
I mean, if someone's doing messengering work, what are some tips they could take away? Like don't have the super narrow bars?
Well, I would say that would be one. But, you know, whatever they like to ride, if it's comfortable, go for it. I would say they need to stretch, because they're spending lots of time on that bike. And in order to still be comfortable in that position 10 years from now, after this abusive job on their body, then it really behooves them to stretch so they can still be in that aggressive position 10 years later.
Don't burn yourself out. Yeah.
Yeah. So flexibility is pretty important.
Yeah. You know, cycling is a really unusual sport in that you strengthen your muscles in a really shortened position. You know, running, you're extending your legs behind you, right?
Uh-huh.
But cycling, you're closing your legs in a really shortened zone. So your hip flexors get really tight in a very small segment, right? And you're not fully extending your leg like when you swim. You have this shortened hamstring. So it's getting really strong, but not very long. And so you need the length in order to have your hips be able to rotate forward to reach the bar, but you don't get that length while you're riding. So that's why stretching is important off the bike. And a lot of cyclists think, oh, if I just ride more, I'm going to be a better rider. Well, core strength and flexibility you don't get by riding, but it's essential.
Right. Yeah. And Aaron, you're way better at doing yoga. Like I'm still never technically done
yoga. I don't
know
if I would call it yoga.
You stretch.
It's, you know, yeah, I was given some positions and I've tried to maintain them. I don't know if I'm still doing them correctly anymore. It's been
right.
a while.
Whereas,
the fact that you're doing it all is impressive and good.
Yeah. Because my wife does yoga every day and she, you know, I feel like it's really good for her. She's really good at doing yoga. She is. She's good at being active and she's good at taking care of herself after being active. I do not fall into those categories. And so I need to, what would you say to people who are afraid of yoga or stretching?
Don't call it yoga.
Yeah. That's the first thing.
Go.
Don't make it high and mighty. And
don't make it high and mighty. Just high-minded. Just stretch your hips. Yeah. Stretch your hamstrings. Stretch your calves. Move your back. And think of it like hydrating when you eat food. You need water in order to process the food that you're putting in, right? You need stretching in order to bring the muscles back to their normal length from when, before you exercised. Exercising is going to compress your muscles and use them and shorten them. So you're trying to bring it back to your normal. And if you don't stretch ever, then it's slowly but surely over the decade, it's going to get shorter and shorter.
Leading me to where I am today.
Or a Dutch bike.
Right, a really narrow handlebars. Is there anything that you can think of that, like, the most common mistake you see people making? People come in for a bike fit, what is something that you see? It's like, oh, we got to change this right away.
Wearing skinny jeans.
Well, some would argue that might not be a mistake. I would say seat height is often incorrect, either too high or too low. There's a lot of myths out there. There's a lot of people that think that the higher their seat is, the more they can extend their legs, the more power they're going to get. And then there's a lot of people that really want to be
do some adjustments here.
Conversely, there's a lot of people that really want their entire foot touching the ground. And bikes are not designed well on the seat.
Yes, and I've had that argument before.
Yeah, which is important if you're getting used to riding for the first time. You want to be secure enough so that you feel comfortable at a corner and, like, you're not going to fall over. But the bicycle is designed to where if you're on the seat, if the pedal is at the right height, usually you don't have very much foot on the ground. So there is a sweet spot of, like, the amount that your knee needs to be open for power. And it's one of those things where you don't ever want your leg fully extended, or you're going to tear a hamstring or overuse your Achilles tendon.
Yeah. But if your seat's too low. I kind of screwed up my Achilles the other year because of that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And if your seat's too low, your knees are going to hurt. It's a lot of pressure on
that knee
joint.
I've done that too.
It's like walking like Groucho Marx. You know how, maybe you guys haven't watched many Marx Brothers.
It's been a while.
He does this walk where it's like he's mostly, it's all with his knees.
Oh, really?
And he's like crouched down.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You should watch some Marx Brothers.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the...
Not just for research.
Also for entertainment.
Also for entertainment, yes.
Yeah. You know, the most knee pain I've ever had from bicycling is from my tall bike, ironically.
Oh.
Because it's a really small frame on top.
Oh.
And the saddle was too low. Okay. So, yeah. It can go both ways.
But,
yeah. Okay, so saddle. So make sure you check into that, dial into it.
Yeah.
You should be able to extend your leg nearly all the way, but not too far.
Yeah. Technically, the knee bend should be about 20 degrees, plus or minus.
I was going to say, is there a trick, but 20 degrees?
There is, but you can't really see it yourself because you're on the bike. And so as soon as you, like, move to the side to look at it, you're not going to be able to see it correctly. So it is best to have somebody observe that and set it up for you if you're trying to get precise. Otherwise, listen to your body. If your knees are hurting in front, your seat is probably too low. If your knees are hurting behind or your ankle is hurting, it's probably too high.
Huh.
So that's kind of the common sense way to go.
Yeah.
And if you ride a lot, your body tells you. You're like, oh, it's not quite right. Something needs to change. And then, you know, the saddle position front to back can be a piece of that as well. So if you're struggling and having a hard time finding that sweet spot of the saddle, go find a bike fitter. Come visit us at Gladys or something.
I was going
like
to ask, where could someone find you? Where could someone be observed stretching their legs on their bikes?
Yeah, you know, most good bike shops have a fitter, and sometimes, you know, there's no standard like there is in the medical profession or in physical therapy. But if you ask them some questions like, oh, what's your philosophy? You really want somebody that has kind of a biomechanical approach, but there are a few good schools. Specialized Bicycle Company has a good school, so almost every Specialized dealer will have a bike fitter on staff because they want to help their cyclists stay riding. Same with Trek. And so some of those bigger dealers will always have a good trained fitter. But a lot of the smaller shops just love it and are passionate about keeping people uninjured and on the bike. And so, yeah, Gladys Bicycle Fitting Services are two of the best in Portland. But there's a lot of good fitters out there.
Yeah, but people have heard your voice and they know that you know what you're talking about. So they should go to Gladys Bikes on the 29th in Alberta. Is that
29th
right?
29th in Alberta. Yeah.
In Northeast Portland, Oregon.
Right next to Vita Cafe. There's
Ask
good
for
coffee.
Stephanie. Yeah.
Or Natalie, the proprietress of Sweet Pea, is also a fitter there.
That's
so.
Right.
I actually got fitted by Natalie.
Nice.
Oh, gosh. Maybe 2 years ago now?
Yeah.
It's been a while.
She's the other half of the Snack Parade podcast.
Correct.
Which is, what, three episodes? Proudly. Four.
Four, maybe?
Yes.
Four episodes in?
All of which were released, or at least all of which were recorded before our 250th episode.
Yes.
Because they, I was going to say Gladys, but no.
Leah.
Leah. Her name is Leah. She's been on the show.
The
like
joke has taken over my brain.
Times.
In fact,
that's
I would remember you of saying she's one of your very favorite people.
Of course she is. Yes.
That's how it starts. You start off by joking, doing it wrong, and then it just becomes permanent.
Yes. So beware. Just like your bike fit, eventually someone's going to get hurt. So go to Gladys Bikes. But yes.
So someone comes to you for a fitting, what is like one of the first questions you ask them?
How many miles are you riding a week? What injuries have you had? What is your goal? And what pain do you currently have? Those are probably the top four. Okay. We don't even see them on the bike until we get a history of what's going on in their body, what's gone on in their body in the past, and what are they going to do with the bike? And then we go from there.
This is what we're looking for.
Yes.
Yeah.
It actually takes a good fit process will take an hour to 2 hours to do a thorough workover of knowing your body and what you're doing and then doing some physical examination. I mean, we're just testing flexibility and strength, but and some basic measurements. And then we get you up on the bike and start to move things around.
Very good. So. Well, we should probably wrap up for tonight. Thank you so much for joining us. I know we just barely scratched the surface.
Well, thanks for having me. Let your listeners know that a bike fit is better than having a custom suit because it's like having a custom bike without the cost.
I was going to say it's
and
like
you don't have to go all the way to Singapore for it.
That's right.
So true.
Most people think of a bike fit or like the way they fit their bike is like you go out and you buy a pair of pants, right? But this is like having your clothes tailored for you.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Yeah. Well, we hope we can come back sometime soon and we'll talk about many more things related to the body and its mechanics.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Yeah.
And we're back. Wasn't that a great interview?
That was wonderful.
We're saying this,
so
assuming
much.
that is the case, and why wouldn't it be?
I learned a lot about how to fit myself on a bike.
Are you ready for news and mail?
I am.
All right.
I love the calendar. Don't ever use that.
The calendar.
The What's calendar.
Be a part of it.
March 11th, the Dells Mountain 60. By the way.
That's coming up quick.
I want to point out. You know what's not on the calendar
what's
anymore?
That?
The Kinetic in Motion.
That's right.
Derby. Now I'm going to slaughter the name. I'm so sorry.
No. Joseph, in Gainesville, Florida,
yes.
Did you go? Did
Tell
you
us all about it.
Yes. We want to know.
So March 11th, the Dells Mountain 60 coming up. Get your shit together.
That's right.
March 23rd, the Timber Trail launch party.
GPS coordinates for everybody.
Yeah. April 15th, 10 a.m., Lads 500.
It's a century, and it's a relay.
Assemble your crew.
The course is an eighth of a mile long.
May 5th, film by bike.
Yes. Good stuff.
June 10th, this just added.
What?
Clever Cycles turns 10 years old.
Holy shit.
That's right.
That's great. Good for them.
Yes.
I thought they'd been around longer than that, honestly. Like, they're a real establishment here in town. I'm
well,
happy for
it. I could double check, but I thought that's...
No, let's just say it now. Let's purvey this fact.
Spreading rumors.
Yes.
Nope. Turns 10.
Hey, and you know
All
what happens?
All day party. Details forthcoming.
Oh, nice. So there's going to be an event.
Yes.
Nice. And the day after that...
Day after that, Dad's on vacation.
Yeah.
Go get some swag at Clever Cycles and then
Pants
wear...
just a little bit too short.
Then go sport it at Dad's on vacation.
Hawaiian shirts.
June 4th, I don't think you can get Hawaiian sure it's at Clever Cycles.
Oh, okay. Yes. Go somewhere else.
June 14th, Bicycle Christmas.
Buy a bicycle.
Buy a bicycle for someone you love or
That's
someone
right.
you just met.
Yeah, or love yourself.
Or love yourself, yes. July 7th, the Steens Mazama 1000.
1,000 miles of dot tracking, dot stalking.
This will be fun.
Yeah, either watch the dots or be a dot.
I'm not sure which one I want.
You know, Nathan Jones is still on his Around the World quest right now.
I know.
And I've been watching his dot.
Oh, yeah? Where is his dot?
He's
currently?
Close to... He was in Croatia, I think, when I last checked. It was a couple days ago, so he might be somewhere else now. And I'm going to embarrass myself if I guess. So I'm bad with Southern European geography.
I mean, no one here knows where Croatia is anyway.
Okay,
right?
So then let's say he's on his way to Italy.
It's been a...
Is that right?
There you go.
Is that right? I got it wrong, didn't I?
I don't think Italy's like...
Which side of the boot is Croatia on?
Which way is he going? Is he going
east.
West? He's going east.
He's going east.
Yeah, I don't think he got it.
Okay, never mind.
Or maybe you did.
Who knows?
This just shows that I don't know where Croatia is.
Wherever
either.
He is, he's drinking double espressos.
July 15th through the 16th, the Seattle to Portland.
Group
STP.
Health in Seattle. Yep, STP. And I've never done that. It always falls on my birthday or really close to my birthday.
That's right.
And I'm probably not going to do it this year either because I'm probably going to be in the woods, but we'll see.
I kind of want to do it.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
I don't know if I want to do it this year.
Yeah.
No, I should do it.
Would you register or would you pirate?
I mean, if I say I'm going to pirate, like, that sort of defeats the
hypothetically.
Purpose.
I mean, do you want to just ride your bike or do you want to, like...
Can you imagine me, like, showing up and someone's like, you are pirating!
You're
I
the
know
one!
It! I heard you say it!
I'm sure you wouldn't be the only one.
No, of course not.
But, yeah, I guess that, I mean, I don't know. What are the ethical issues? Write us, thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. So, yes, having just opened that debate, let's quickly close it and move on to our headlines.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike? I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Hey, I'm in the news.
Yes, you are. You were on the podcast host about, and you talked about podcasting.
I did.
I read that article.
What did you think?
I thought you presented yourself quite well.
What? Thank you.
I think it's funny that he talked. He asked you a lot of questions about like how to podcast or what makes a podcast good.
Right.
And you really brought it to you like the people who listen to the podcast is what makes the podcast good or what makes it. At least in our experience.
As we all know.
What keeps it going.
Yeah. I don't want to, you know, I mean, we try to bring you good content, but half of the show is interacting with other cool people.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's happening. Yeah. So, we're no longer with the podcast host. They're no longer holding our media. But he did ask me to you know, participate in an interview, so I did.
Yeah. That's cool. This comes to us via Tim Mooney and the Pedal Shift Project.
That's right.
Coca-Cola versus bike lanes.
Danger, danger.
The DDOT in Washington, D.C. is quoted as saying, "We towed the Coca-Cola truck and contractor received a stop work order and warned bike lanes cannot be blocked."
That's the, the Department of, or the District Department of Transportation for Washington, D.C. Yeah.
Yeah, and here's some. Look at that. So
we got a buffered bike lane.
I read the quote here in this article, and I thought like, yeah, okay, truck is parked in the bike lane.
Yeah,
like it's cool that the Department of Transportation like, you know, came to the bike lane's aid.
Yes,
but part of me is like, yeah, truck parked in the bike lane, like that's every day.
Yeah. Right, until you realize that,
and
it's
you come down, and yes,
buffered bike lane.
You had to like. Pull up and over a curb.
And all four wheels are inside that buffered area, right? So, like, it was like a kerchunk, 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 kerchunk.
And then, like, grinding the tires till they, like, fit into that.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just naturally, like, pull that in that easily.
Yeah, that's tire damage, and it's a bunch of like really shaken up carbonated soda. So like that's a dangerous thing in and of itself.
Yes, don't buy a Coke in Washington D.C. It's just going to be flat.
That's right. The other one was what was it? Like a contractor or somebody parking just in a bike lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Just
tail ass end sticking right out. Danger, danger.
Which is interesting because on Twitter, someone I follow, I probably shouldn't out them.
Okay.
But had a picture. I mean, it's Twitter. It's all public anyways. But
well.
Had a picture of several cars in a row parked with their door and mirror, like basically in the bike lane. Like,
okay.
So the tires are not.
Tires are not.
Will,
the mirrors
I
are.
I will give it to the Portland... whoever is in charge.
Uh-huh.
Yes, the tires are not in the bike lane. However, like, since the doors bow out and the mirrors jut out from the rest of the car, like, all of that is still in the bike lane.
That's a contour, yeah. Which takes away your usable bike lane space.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. And this person tweeted this picture and then was subsequently informed that those cars are parked legally.
Legally parked.
Yes.
Dangerously parked.
Yes.
The laws must change.
I do believe so.
Yeah.
If a law is unjust, should you follow the law?
It's a good question.
Tell us at the Sprocket Podcast at gmail.com.
Yes. Getting into sticky territory today. Just one sad story here.
Yeah.
I don't want to dwell on it. It's also kind of old news at this point, I guess. But I was just thinking about people who walk across the country. Like there was a guy... I want to say it was 2015 or 16.
Down in Lincoln City, right?
He was going to walk across the country.
Well, I thought he was going to walk from the northern border to the southern border, right?
Oh, that's possible.
With a soccer ball.
Oh.
We're talking about two different
incidents. We are, yeah, because there was another guy who his son was gay and was bullied and committed suicide. And the guy was like, I'm going to walk all the way across the country to let people know about this. But then he got hit by a truck. And died, like, before he left Oregon, I think.
Yes.
Or maybe Idaho. Anyways.
He didn't get very far.
So one more story. My friend Galen sent me a link to this guy. He was a writer. He wrote a book about, you know, his various barefoot journeys.
So I read this article. He had done it once before.
Yeah, and written a book about that experience.
And this time was doing it for a cause. Unfortunately, that cause escapes me right now. And he was doing it barefoot. Oh, climate change.
Yes, right.
Yes.
But yeah, it was really interesting, I thought, just to see that, I don't know, like walking for a cause is fairly dangerous.
Apparently so.
And I think that's, well, again, the laws must change. This is, you know, obviously the highways are not designed in many places with pedestrians in mind, but it shouldn't be that easy for someone to die just because they want to walk somewhere.
Right.
So... yeah, I only bring it up because I think it's interesting. People should know. So the link's on the website. Check it out.
Next up, these next two come to us from Matt Brunker, our Matt B, our senior news correspondent.
Our Oslo correspondent.
In this case, yes, our Oslo correspondent. By the way, did you know that Oslo was the capital of Norway before reading this article?
I did not.
Ha.
I didn't know it was Oslo.
I pronounced it Oslo.
All right.
I don't know. Maybe it is Oslo.
What are they doing?
They are giving their residents $1,200 towards purchasing an electric cargo bike.
Each one of their residents?
Anyone who purchases an electric cargo bike.
Wow.
Yes. They had a program where you could buy an e-bike. And you would get some of that money reimbursed, about $600.
Okay.
Equivalent.
Yeah. So this is twice that.
So for an electric cargo bike, yes, you can get twice that back.
Incredible.
This is interesting because there are several programs here in the U.S. that you can kind of buy a SUV and get it subsidized, like registered as like this is for your company, you know, and you
it's
get it like partially
vehicle.
Subsidized.
Sure. Or electric vehicle credits or like buying solar panels for your house.
Right.
But
no
you can't.
Such thing of getting credits for having a bicycle.
The laws must change.
The laws must change. That should be like the theme of tonight's show.
Apparently. I should drop in. I got a great song. I'll play it later.
Yeah. Will we read the credits over this?
Yeah, sounds great. Okay. I hope I can share it.
Can we do that?
I don't know. We'll find out.
next up, Pfeiffer Canyon Bridge in Big Sur is cracked beyond repair.
Oh yeah, this is from.
And must be replaced.
Yes. The bridge must change.
The bridges must change.
The logs must change. That's no, so, concrete, but yeah.
We didn't bike over this bridge when we did Big Sur.
I think we did. Because we went through most of Big Sur, right?
Well, yeah. And yeah, So I thought I was under the impression that this particular part of the bridge only served northbound.
Maybe you could be right. I don't remember specifically which bridge it was. Right. I looked at it on Google Maps to see if you could get around it, and you can't.
So nobody's biking Big Sur.
Well, I
at
guess
least that far.
You can't drive over it, but I'm wondering about bicycle access. Like, how blocked off will it be? Because if it's going to be like a big chain link 6-foot fence.
Have you seen the pictures?
I saw the cracks.
I'm not biking over that.
See, I feel like I would. And I think maybe that's foolhardy, but yes. At the same time.
Yes, it is.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I can't tell how cracked it is and how bad it is.
It's cracked all. I mean, maybe you should look at the pictures.
Well, yeah,
again.
But
it's
the bottom
like
is
bowing.
Cracked.
It's bowing,
and it's
man.
Bowed.
You could be like the straw that broke the camel's back.
Isn't there rebar in that shit?
I feel like that's
how they build
rebar,
bridges.
Rebar is only like as good as the concrete around it. Like rebar is just to like kind of give the concrete skeleton.
Well, no one should drive a semi over this for
certainly
sure.
Certainly
no lorries, but. I don't know, man. A cargo bike or a touring bike with your panniers? I feel like you could get away with it. Maybe I'm wrong. I guess we'll find out.
Oh, this is not how I want our series to end.
Well, and honestly, you know, when it's closed, it's closed. That you shouldn't ride
well,
on it. That would be wrong.
And I would imagine like it would probably be difficult even just to pirate ride it. I'm sure there's people out there.
They're probably going to make it hard.
Yeah.
I mean, in no way should anyone ever pass through a fence or go around a barrier or, you know, in no way should someone go where they're not supposed to be.
I would not recommend that.
That would be wrong.
And we would never do that.
We would not tell you to do such a thing.
Yes.
Well, we'll be interested to see how this shapes up and if there's any solution by the time summer touring season comes around.
Yeah. So lastly, from Tim Mooney, an announcement.
From
yes,
the Pedal Shift Project?
From the Pedal Shift Project, yes.
Pedalshift.net.
Have you heard of the Pedal Shift Project?
If not, you should. And you should hear about them from us.
That'll be coming up. but he sent us a little blip from the Instagram. The TSA says, don't.
Oh.
Well, says you can carry your guns or not carry them out of the plane, but you can check them in your baggage.
Check baggage is okay.
Yes. Don't put them in your bicycle.
Don't stuff them inside your bike tires.
Right.
I like my favorite comment on Instagram was like, I'm sure he just forgot they were in there.
Right.
But yeah, there's like a ton of gun related shit, just guns and ammo just packed into this bicycle tube. And TSA is like, check this out, kids. Don't do this.
There were five live rounds.
Stay in school.
In that picture.
Don't do drugs.
And don't dismantle your gun and pack it in your tires.
That would be wrong. Yeah, it was ludicrous, really, in many ways.
Yeah.
I think we retweeted this, but it's worth seeing if you haven't seen it yet. We'll post the image on our. I think we can post the image on our site. Yeah. Speaking of Tim Mooney.
Speaking of Tim Mooney and the Pedal Shift Project and pedalshift.net.
Yes.
So he set up a little survey.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did you refer to it in last?
We did mention it, yeah.
Episode?
Yeah,
okay.
Now there's like a pie
and
graph
so now
and everything.
Yeah, we've got results here. I was trying to look up the results on my own. Apparently, you kind of have to have the secret password. For
yeah,
that.
He's sending us screen caps of his back end.
So, the blue shaded part of this pie chart says, I found the pedal shift from the sprocket. The red part of this pie chart says, I found the sprocket from the pedal shift, and the yellow is I discovered both. Was that precisely
another way?
At the same time?
Precisely at the same time.
Precisely.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of back scratching going on because we have 47% of these 36
holy
responses.
Holy shit! Yes.
What's 47% of 30? That's like It's like 18 or something.
Five.
What?
20.
Oh, I don't know. and then Tim is right behind us, where a lot of people also heard of him or of us through him.
Yeah.
And then there's a few responses. The smallest piece, the most pie-shaped, wedge pie-shaped wedge of the pie is other
11.1%.
Bicycle times and such. So
right, yes. So of the people who responded to us like via Twitter or whatever, we've got, other than the normal pedal shift versus sprocket, I've got bicycle times at one, pathless pedaled, apparently someone found out about us through the pathless pedal.
They just retweeted my Dutch tub video from the Clever Cycles guy, back when Clever Cycles rented Dutch tubs. They don't do it anymore, but you know, you can see me in all my glory in a hot tub.
And Logan Smith, apparently someone heard about and follows us because they heard about it.
There we go.
From Logan Smith.
Logan Smith gets
Thank
a point.
Thank you so much.
That's right. Well, Logan Smith gets, he should get points anyways. He's the coolest. Yeah.
He should get his own sound.
He should. Logan, send us your sound.
There you
That's
go.
That's right. Okay. Well, we...
We got also worth mentioning in this whole thing is someone tweeted at us, without the pedal shift referring me to the Sprocket podcast, I would have never learned that the Beer Mongers are at Southeast Division and 12.
That's right, yeah. And, I mean, maybe we should just mention that at the Beer Mongers, at Southeast Division and 12, you can stop in, get a pint on draft, get anything that you want in a can or a bottle, and it's super tasty. It's super good. Tell them the Sprocket podcast sent you. They're nice enough to provide the beverages for all of our recording sessions. So, yeah. Also, Tuesday at the Beer Mongers.
Yeah.
At Southeast Division and 12th. Cribbage night.
Oh,
going
really?
Going on Tuesday, there's a shit ton of cribbage happening.
Is there like tutorials for those of us who are cribbage illiterate?
I'm sure you could get friendly with somebody and they would help you understand.
All right.
But apparently, are you familiar with the concept of skunking someone in cribbage?
No.
I think that's what happens if you're working your way around the board and they restart once they've made their way all the way around the track and they start over.
Yes.
And they get past you before you get to the end.
Oh, so it's like lapping.
It's like
them.
Being lapped.
Yeah.
But in cribbage, yeah. There are prizes for people who do the skunking thing.
Huh.
So, Tuesdays, the Beer Mongers, Southeast Division of 12, cribbage.
Cribbage night.
And I almost never play cribbage without drinking beer. So, this is a good thing.
I can't say I've ever played cribbage.
Yeah.
So,
it's
fun. I could also say I never play cribbage without drinking a beer.
Yeah. Was there anything else in there about Discovery and such?
Just a little blip here from Richard Wazinski, donor. Says, since you're keeping track, I love both the Sprocket podcast and Pedal Shift.
They're like
but
his
it
kids.
All started here for me. I'm listening to a few others that you've recommended, including KBU and Pedal Hub, who are no longer recording. Tim also has led me to great podcasts called The Joyride.
That's right. And Kat from The Joyride is coming in in about a month or so. Yeah. Good news. Well, thank you, Richard. Thank you for sharing that with
us. Yes.
Well, speaking of, you know, we may not have the exact metrics on exactly who found who and from where and such.
And do
although,
we need them, really?
Well, you know, it's we always... love everybody. But one thing we do, beyond the shadow of a doubt, have.
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
New donor.
New donor, Chris B.
Chris B. What's
Thank
up?
Thank you. So much.
Yeah, we're going to take the requisite amount of time to dally over sending your stickers to you. And I believe Chris also gets a patch. So you got more patches? We got more on the way.
I do
okay.
have more patches.
First run is like five more patches left, right? And then we're going to get more.
Three or four,
yep.
maybe.
So there you go. But yes, thank you, Chris. We appreciate that. We appreciate anybody who can donate. And actually, it's not that we don't appreciate if you donate more. But we definitely appreciate more people stepping up at the $2 level so we can mail you stickers after waiting for 3 months. and so that
we just got such a long wait list.
You know, I don't fault anybody for changing their donation or stopping their donation because everybody has to pay for different things at different times. But it does help us out tremendously if, you know, like 50 or 100 people are signed up at the $2 level. That means that we have enough scratch to kind of keep cool things happening. We really appreciate that. We can do stuff that we do because of you, and we appreciate that. So thank you.
Yes. Thank you so much.
What else we got?
And speaking of donations.
Yes.
a little something from my boo, Anna.
You have a boo?
Says, yes. She would double her meager donation for a month to hear our commentary on this.
Ah. Well.
Should we click on this?
I guess we should.
I will say this. So this came to us shortly after I Rickrolled her for Valentine's Day.
Ah.
And so I did preview this to make sure it wasn't a Rickroll.
Okay.
And it's was not.
It's not. Okay. I mean, we would comment on the Rickroll as well.
Well, I suppose so.
Oh, you know what?
Oh, right. We're going to have connection issues, aren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
this will all change. The Wi-Fi must change. Tell you what, we will comment on this on a future date.
Sure.
We'll set this aside.
Yes.
Yeah. What else we got?
Hopefully it's on a month that, you know, you're flush. So our senior Chili Hilly correspondent chronicles his experience.
Mr. T.
Yes.
That's right.
He went to Seattle, did the Chili Hilly.
And it was chilly and hilly.
And it was hilly. Yes.
Yeah. What are the high points of his summary?
So other than it being like under 40 degrees most of the time and rainy, he mentions that there's bikers of all kinds, recumbents, tandem recumbents, regular tandems, trikes, mountain bikes, fat bikes, all sorts of bikes.
That's awesome.
It's not the kind of ride that I thought it was going to be like.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought
it's not a bunch of like stretchy dudes. I mean, maybe it is stretchy dudes, but it's not,
but at least not dominated, but it sounds like everyone's welcome.
Yeah. And it sounds a little bit like what I remember of, the worst day of the year ride here in town.
Yeah.
Which happens here. We didn't have that on our list, but we will.
Yes. He says, so there's something really pleasant about being around 1,000 or two other people on bikes. The rain made taking pictures difficult, but he did send us pictures. Did you get the pictures?
I did not get them. Oh, I'm sorry. That was my
fault. That's all right. And here are the numbers. So it's 33 miles, 2,600 feet of climbing. Most of the climbing is in like rolling terrain, but there are two or three where he was thankful for the mountain gearing of his old mountain bike that
had
converted over.
Very cool.
Yes. At one point, he mentions how he was passing a lot of the roadies who were walking their bikes.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
You know, little bragging rights there.
Weekend warriors.
Yeah, right on. Right on, Mr. T. Anyways, thanks for sending your correspondence.
I'm glad to hear about it. That's great.
It was cool. Oh, yeah. And he says, now I understand why group rides in the rain are better if everyone has fenders.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Unfendered bikes throw a lot of grit and spray into the air.
Just rolling.
It will make me think my non-fender setup on my regular bikes.
Yeah. Well, this is a place where sharing is not caring.
Yeah, right. Yes. well, thank you, Mr. T.
Yes.
And
Keith.
New listener, Keith. Though he says he may eventually need to drop the new listener part.
Yes.
He says, thanks for taking my tweet the other day.
We always take tweets.
Wanted to drop you a line for a couple reasons. The big one is I've been neglecting a lot of other podcasts I listen to because I'm digging through your past episodes.
And so shall it ever be. Ignore the rest of the world. Listen to us.
He mentions that he used to skate. He doesn't anymore. But
yeah.
Admires Corey Poole's
Corey Poole is rad.
60-mile commute story.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Listened to Kyle Hetty the other day, and he agrees that avoiding the sense of elitism was how he came to the Sprocket podcast.
We have to add that to the categories.
avoiding elitism.
There we go, yes. Don't be a douche. Don't be a dick, but yes.
Yes, and he talks about commuting clipless.
Uh-huh, he likes it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we've traditionally taken a line against clipless pedals because of the elitism. But he mentions that they work out really well for him.
Yeah. And you can get, you know, clipless shoes that pose as regular shoes.
Secret clipless shoes.
Yes.
Yeah. And also he says that keeping your traction on the pedals when it's raining, that's a big
you're
thing.
Already clipped in, you're not going to, like, your feet aren't going to slide around on the pedals.
I've never had that problem with my pedals, but I've had that problem on my tall bike, which is the worst bike to have that problem with, where the pedals are super slick and my shoes are super slick as well. So
I have the cages, the toe cages.
Oh, right, yeah.
And that works so long as, you know, you can get both feet into the cages.
Uh-huh.
And there's every now and then, because, you know, you will slide one out when you're stopped.
Right.
And there's every now and then where I go to get started that I just keep missing and keep missing and keep missing. I'm unable to, like, get that foot in the cage.
That's right.
It's just this weird, awkward dance. So annoying. But the, what are they called? Bear trap style pedals that are on the Pugsley that Anna and I built.
Good stuff.
Those are just platform pedals, but, man, they grab your shoe. They're great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Just don't run them into your shin.
Right, right. Will they kill rats?
Maybe.
Okay.
One can hope.
I should get some.
Yeah.
Well, and he also mentions Indianapolis.
Second Friday of every month.
Yes. The monthly bike party. The bike party happens in a lot of different cities, as I understand. But in Indianapolis, this is a place where that happens. So every month, West Plaza of the City Market.
They roll out at 7.
That's right.
For all of our Indianapolis listeners.
Yeah, and they have a Facebook page for all the communication. That's how a lot of people do these things these days. So we should put that on the calendar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet.
Thank you, Keith.
Even more love?
Even more love from listeners. So grateful to have your witty podcast on my training runs this winter. I am a grown 44-year-old man running in circles around the lake while mysteriously chuckling.
That's right. Yeah, he's training for the Boston Marathon.
Yes.
Which made me think that he lives in Boston, but he does not. He lives north of us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, up in Washington.
So he's going to fly over.
I think I know the lake that he's running around. Maybe. I could be wrong. But Tom.
Yes. In April, he's running the marathon. And after that, he fully intends to get to his local bike shop to find something to sit down on.
There we go. Fabulous.
Yes.
Well,
thank you,
do
Tom.
More than just sit. Don't
yeah,
just, you can buy
you
a chair.
You want a pedal.
You can buy a chair for that.
Yeah. And Richard Wyszynski, again, gives us a movie recommendation. If you're looking for a movie to watch, I just saw one that was pretty good on Netflix. It's called Alley Cats.
Alley Cats. Hmm.
I wonder what it's about.
I wonder.
Alley Cat Races.
That, I wonder if it's a documentary or if it's like a dramatization of some kind.
Ooh.
That'd be awesome. We covered this one last week.
Yes. Oh, we did.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm going to skip it then. But that is a pretty cool way of holding your umbrella, by the way.
Yeah.
So lastly, a tweet from Anthony Hardwick. Recently discovered the Sprocket podcast and really enjoy it.
Thanks, Anthony.
Was wondering if you knew of a similar pod from Colorado.
And I responded saying that one half of the Bike Nerds podcast, I forget the guy's name. Anyways, he lives in Denver or thereabouts. And so he talks a little bit. He's a runner and that sort of thing. And then his co-host Sarah lives in Memphis. So
oh, wow. So they do it over Skype?
They do. But yeah, I don't know of any other show like ours particularly, but there should be more.
I know of one at least in DC that's kind of like ours.
What's it called?
The Pedal Shift. Have you heard of the Pedal Shift Project?
Yeah. Is that the one at pedalshift.net?
That's correct. Yeah, you should. They even have a survey going on.
Really? Tell me about
wondering
this.
Wondering who has recommended who.
Well, maybe they, I mean, you know, maybe they should tell people to come over here, and then everybody should go to the Beer Mongers at Southeast Division and 12th.
Most definitely.
Yeah, I think that would be a good plan. More often than not, I think, you know, if you're wondering what you're supposed to do with yourself, I would say get yourself to the Beer Mongers, Southeast Division and 12th, after going to pedalshift.net.
I like how you say that as if it's a place. Go to pedalshift.net and then go to the Beer Mongers.
For sure. All right. You ready for this?
Let's do it.
All right. Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter at Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Herb Bird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to sustaining donors Logan Smith, Johnny K. I say this like by memory. Shadowfoot, Katharina Mellengard,
Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson, Ethan Georgie,
Justin Martin, Eric Iverson, Cameron Lean,
Richard Wazinski, Tim Mooney from Pedalshift.net.
Woo!
Orange and Purple.
Glenn Kubisch, Matt Kelly, Jim Gooden.
Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Miller, Todd Parker.
Chris Gonzalez, Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna.
Dan Gebhardt is a time traveler.
Oh, that's
Dave
right.
Knows, Chris Smith, Christy Kaster.
Don't ever ask him if he's a time traveler. He'll deny it. Caleb Jenkinson, JP Cooley, Peanut Butter Jar Matt.
Patrick Archain, Sebastian Fool, Marco Lowe.
Rich Otterstrom, Andrew in Colorado, Drew the Walder.
Anna, Krista, John Wasserman.
Andre Johnson, King of Division, Josh Zissen.
Richard G., Guthrie Straw, Brandon Shelby.
Campsite, Aaron Green, Mac Nurse, David.
Kathy at Cycling, Walking, Eating, Talking.
Nathan Poulton, Chris Watson, Rory in Michigan.
Michael Flournoy, Jeremy Kitchen, David Belay.
Tim
He sent
Coleman.
Me an email.
Oh.
He says it's Belay.
It's Belay.
But it's also been called Belays or Belace or what was the other one? Belaze. But he goes by, it's actually David Belay.
Like, isn't that like a mountain climbing term?
I think so. But spelled
maybe
differently.
A boating term.
Spelled differently.
But yes. Anyways, Tim Cole. No, yes. Tim Coleman, Mr. T, Harry Hugel.
Yes, no, yes. Ed Whitman, EJ Fitterin, Paul Culbertson,
Brad Hipwell, Thomas Skado, and Christopher Barnett. Welcome to the fold.
Yeah. And all of our former donors who have helped us get this far, we do appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Now, go brush your teeth
and go to bed.